Well, welcome. I should apologise. Andrew was chivying us along because we're a minute late, and we like to be on time as well as on budget. So apologies for that. But welcome to everyone here in the room and to those on the conference call. I'm John Holland-Kay, the Chief Executive of Heathrow. With me, I have Javier Echave, who's our acting CFO, and Andrew Evion, our treasurer. This afternoon, we're talking about the half-year results for Heathrow Airport Holdings, which has been an excellent first half of the year. I'm going to talk about the operational highlights. Javier will do the difficult financial bit, and then I'll just wrap up on the strategic agenda. But I'm not going to talk explicitly about Brexit so that somebody can ask me that question at the end. So I'll leave that to you. And we will be having a Q&A when we're finished. So let me start with slide three, which just talks about our overall performance. And for those of you who are following remotely, you can view the presentation either through the link on the invitation or directly on our website. So for the first half of the year, really fantastic performance. The slide says robust half year. I don't know why we're being so cautious with that. It's been a really good first half of the year. Better value for money for passengers. Our prices are coming down. But at the same time, we're reducing our costs much faster. And passengers are choosing to spend more money with us while they're travelling through. So financially, we're doing very well. And from a service point of view, also doing well. We've just been named for the third time ACI Europe's best major airport in Europe. And recently won the Skytrax Award, voted for by passengers as the best airport in Western Europe. So a real mark of how far we have come. From a financial point of view, revenue's up about 1%, but EBITDA, our sort of core underlying profit measure, up about 4.5%. And we've been taking advantage of actually some very attractive financial conditions for us and raised £1 billion so far this year, including raising some funds at very good rates since the EU decision. So that's a good sign, I think, of how robust Heathrow is and how it is a good port in any storm or in good weather too. From a strategic point of view, we continue to drive service standards up. We continue to invest in resilience and training our people. And as many people do, we wait on the decision from the government in response to the Airports Commission recommendation for expansion of Heathrow. And I don't want to be standing in front of you in 6 months' time telling you that we're still waiting for a decision. We just want to get on with it. So let me move on to slide four and talk about demand and what the patterns we're seeing around the world. And typically, as you might expect, the main growth that we are seeing is on emerging market routes. And over the last 6 years or so, if you look at the change in trading patterns, you'll see that even though Heathrow has been full for all that time, we've been able to add new destinations to emerging markets. We actually have about 6 or 7 new emerging market destinations we've added in that time. And those are some of the ones that are contributing to growth. China, as you would expect, but also Vietnam and Indonesia, which are two relatively new routes. And then in Latin America, also with good growth in Mexico and in Bogota with Avianca. So helping to make sure that Britain remains connected to some of those high-growth markets. Within the UK, you'll see that passenger volumes are lower than they were this time last year. That's mainly because Virgin have pulled back their Little Red service. Actually, if you were to look over that same 6 year period, you'd see we've been adding new routes to the UK. So we're fulfilling our role as the UK's hub, connecting all the regions of the UK to all of those growing markets. And if I look on slide five, you'll see some of the shorter-term patterns of growth for some of the major airports in Europe. And you'll see that if you take a 12-month view of growth, Heathrow is still the largest airport in Europe by quite some way. Frankfurt, Heathrow, Charles de Gaulle, all growing at somewhere between 0 and 2%. But quite significant growth happening at some other airports, Istanbul, Schiphol, and Madrid, all growing very well. So there is quite significant demand out there, and it's a flavour for what Heathrow could achieve if only we had the opportunity to expand the airport and welcome all the business that would want to come to Heathrow. You may know that there's about 30 airlines who want to get into Heathrow but can't. I thought it might be worth looking at some of the medium-term trends as well. And the chart on the right-hand side just shows what's been happening to growth quarter by quarter. And typically, you'll see that most airports had been growing quite well through to the end of 2015. and then started to trend downwards, particularly in the second quarter of this year. And I think Schiphol has been the only exception to that. And what we're seeing here is a combination of factors. There has certainly been some effect from the security issues at some airports. You can see that clearly with Istanbul and perhaps Paris as well. You can see the impact of weather and airspace regulations across large parts of Europe. That's affecting most of the European airports. But I think also a little bit, certainly for the UK on some international routes, particularly North America, just before the EU referendum, there was a bit of a slowdown, in, particularly in some of the premium traffic across the Atlantic. And that is, I mean, as you may know better in your own organisation, just a little bit of waiting and seeing, not quite closing deals before the referendum, just to see what was going to happen. And the question, of course, is, well, what happens next? Is that going to come back or is it not? And we'll no doubt talk about that later. If we look at the core performance of the business, this has probably been the best 6 months that Heathrow has ever had. Our core measure is overall passenger satisfaction, and you'll see that over the last 10 years or so, the purple line here in the top left-hand corner, Heathrow's passenger satisfaction has been growing pretty much steadily. Occasionally, there's been a good kicker from opening a new terminal, such as Terminal 5, and you can see the significant boost that gave us. But since then, most of what we've been doing has been about driving better service standards across the airport. And I guess most people in the room or on the call are fairly frequent travellers, and I hope you see that in your own personal experience. And in quarter two of this year, we received the best feedback we've had ever from passengers. The measure we use is ASQ of 4.16. That means that we're now second out of all of the major airports in Europe in terms of passenger satisfaction. And only Zurich, I think, is ahead of us in that core measure. And actually, if Terminal 2 was an airport in its own right, and it's probably bigger than Zurich, it would be the best airport in Europe. So good signs of things that we're doing. And I talked earlier about the challenges we've had with airspace regulation and with weather. That has been really tough, particularly over the last few months. But in spite of that, we've been able to get the best punctuality that we have ever had. So we're well ahead of last year. And that's because of a lot of hard work that we've been doing operationally to make sure we can get planes coming in on time. And we've talked in the past about some of those. Time-based separation has really given us a lot more flexibility, and it's just one example of the hard work that we're putting in. And you can see it also in terms of our baggage performance. The 13 per 1,000 is the measure for baggage misconnect rates. I would always say that is too high. It is. We don't want any bags to misconnect. But actually, these are some of the best performances of any major airport in Europe and the best that we've ever had. And we've been working hard to improve baggage performance for passengers. So that's a quick overview of what we've been doing. Really strong start to the year, very strong operational performance, underpinning great financial performance. And I'll hand over to Javier, who's just going to talk a little bit more about our financial performance.
Thank you very much, John. Good afternoon to everyone in the room, and good morning to American investors in the line. Is there a better way of waking up than watching these phenomenal financial results? I have to say I'm very happy today to meet again investors after several years involved in more operational areas. I'm glad to see familiar faces in the room, and even more glad to see that time is treating you extremely well. Moving on to financial performance highlights on slide 8, we have seen continued robust operating performance with EBITDA in the period up 4.4%. 1% revenue growth reflects more passengers and increased retail and services revenue. And on the cost side, we have delivered an acceleration in the year-on-year decline since Q1, generating at the end of June a 3.6% annual decrease. In terms of balance sheet, the regulatory asset base growth in the period is modest, which reflects two main drivers. Firstly, low inflation, reducing the year-on-year indexation uplift into our asset base. And secondly, a more modest investment program in the current regulatory period. In terms of net debt, we continue operating within guidance previously shared with investors. Our capital structure continue having plenty of headroom to covenants, with headroom to Heathrow Finance leverage covenants remaining around our 5 percentage point target. Turning to slide 9, let me share with you further details around our revenues. With year-on-year reduction in aeronautical charges and constraints in runway capacity, revenue growth is driven by continued strong retail growth. The majority of our revenue comes from aeronautical income, where performance is essentially fixed by the regulatory tariff and passenger volumes. So you can see in the chart flat revenues reflecting an almost exact offset between those two factors. The highlight of revenue performance continue being our retail income, which has maintained a year-on-year growth rate above 7%. Very impressive performance, especially if we consider that inflation during the last year has been rating at around 1 and 1.5% level. In the period, we saw a continuation of a strong performance in luxury, reflecting the enhancement of Terminal 5's commercial proposition that was completed last year. Building on this success, we are currently undertaking similar enhancements to Terminal 4's commercial proposition, and we should see benefits starting to flow from the end of this year. In other income, it's worth to report some interesting dynamics. Firstly, within Heathrow Express, where we are starting to use a more dynamic pricing structure to drive passenger volumes. In other regulated charges, you will be familiar with that term, but it's effectively a pass-through of costs that Heathrow incurs. So the reduction in this revenue is actually a reflection of a successful story in terms of reduction in costs, such as in baggage system operations and maintenance, as well as utilities. Moving on to slide 10 and to costs, we have seen an acceleration in year-on-year cost reduction since Q1, driving a 4% year-on-year reduction in both absolute terms, but also on a per-passenger basis. Employment costs maintain year-on-year reduction around 5%, driven by changes such as to the defined benefit pension scheme, voluntary severance, and new entrant pay levels. The other notable feature on the cost side is the outcome of the successful renegotiation of a major contract for the provision of high-voltage electricity infrastructure services that has resulted in a combination of a one-off reduction in cost in the period that will be followed by recurrent savings in our reported numbers. This revised contract follows on from successes in improving terms of other major contracts in the last year, such as the baggage systems operation and maintenance contract, the provision of air navigation services by NAT, as well as, indeed, the defined benefit pension scheme. In terms of tracking towards the cumulative 600 million cost challenge over the current regulatory period, we are now at well over 500 million having been secured. Slide 11 is hopefully a familiar slide reflecting the cash flow generation over the period. Following the trend from previous quarters, operating cash flow significantly exceeds capital expenditure and interest payments. Strong performance has generated almost £700 million of cash from operations. Capital investment and interest costs were less than £600 million, and taking into account all other outflows in the period, net debt increased just over £100 million since year-end to £11.9 billion in what is seasonally the less cash-generative half of the year. In fact, the net debt forecast for Heathrow SP for year-end in our June 2016 investor report suggests a decline in net debt year-on-year to just over £11.7 billion. Overall, we continue in a period with Heathrow moving to being cash-generative after capital investment and interest, meaning that net debt is expected to move in a relatively narrow band unless there is a pickup in inflation, which of course will be welcome considering the index-linked feature of our regulatory asset base. Turning to our gearing position on slide 12, as was the case in quarter one, our gearing is just marginally higher than the level at the same point in 2015 and shows the expected decline from the seasonal high we experienced in quarter one. Indeed, cash conversion was slightly higher than last year, and if not for that, gearing would have been almost exactly identical year on year. With our strong focus on capital management, we are comfortable we can continue to manage the effects of low inflation environment on leverage. In particular, we continue to have very substantial headroom to the trigger and covenant leverage levels across our different tranches of debt, in particular with £700 million of headroom at Heathrow Finance level. Moving to discuss another period of successful development in our debt financing described in slide 13. Heathrow has continued to raise attractively priced debt from diverse sources, raising about £1 billion since the start of 2016, and as previously shared by John, including a Norwegian krone £1 billion private placement recently closed and post-EU referendum. recent financing has been characterized by implementing financing with delayed drawdown to reduce carry costs, whilst providing certainty of term funding to meet forthcoming debt maturities. This has been a feature of private placements and loan facilities secure across the different levels of the capital structure. We have included in the chart on this slide to provide some additional color on the impact of the financing strategy that we have adopted. Hydro currently has around £2 billion of undrawn facilities and cash resources, primarily coming from two sources, £1.4 billion in revolving credit facilities, as well as £0.6 billion in cash. So the cash flows shown below the line in the chart are the bond maturities we are expecting over the period to March 2017. And above the line, you can see the illustrative timings of when we expect to draw the circa £700 million of delayed drawdown debt that we currently have in place. As you can see, combination of existing cash plus committed and drawn debt will cover the vast majority of the forthcoming maturities, leaving us with a few hundred million drawn on our £1.4 billion revolving credit facility. Obviously, this excludes any further debt that we might raise in the coming 6 to 9 months, if there's an opportunity worthwhile to tackle. After March 2017, our next significant debt maturity is in February 2018, and overall, our liquidity horizon currently extends to September 2018. Overall, we remain very encouraged to the continued strong support that we have received from the investor community, and I'll take the opportunity to thank you very much for your continued support. So, wrapping up, before moving on to the more strategic developments, we have seen continued strong performance this year, very encouraging levels of service and operational performance with unprecedented external recognition of the high-quality service we continue serving to passengers. Higher passenger numbers, good cost controls, and new retail initiatives have driven a 4% increase in EBITDA in the first half of 2016. From a financing perspective, we are in excellent shape, given, as I just mentioned, that our liquidity horizon currently extends to September 2018. We have largely completed our 2016 financing program, but will selectively pursue further opportunities in the months to come. While there's reason to be cautious given the outcome of the EU referendum, we continue operating in the knowledge that Heathrow has proven to be extremely resilient in earlier periods of macroeconomic instability. So through the coming months, we expect to have a renewed focus on securing further efficiencies and commercial opportunities. And overall, we don't see the latest full-year outlook for EBITDA published in June being materially affected by the outcome of the referendum. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'll hand back now to John.
Great, thank you. So let me just cover the strategic update on page 16. So this is, if you remember, our vision is to give passengers the best airport service in the world. We're currently up to number 8 in the world, so we've still got people like Hong Kong and Singapore ahead of us. So that's what we are working to overtake. And I'll be spending some time in Singapore and Hong Kong over the next few months just making sure we can steal as many of their good ideas as we can and create our own better ideas. But our model is that we engage with our people, which is what we call Mojo, transform customer service, and that drives better financial performance. And from a Mojo point of view, we've come a long way. Now 81% of our colleagues say that Heathrow is a great place to work. And given the amount of change we've been through with our people, the terms and conditions, pensions, that's a really good sign of, I think, a healthy organization. We've been doing lots of things over the last 6 months. We've been celebrating our 70th anniversary, and if you're in the airport, you'll see some plaques up to commemorate some of the great events that have happened over the last 70 years. And Joanna Lumley came to join us to open those, and that was a great, absolutely fabulous experience for all of us. We've been doing a lot of work with our people internally to make sure we're tapping into the talent that we have. We've got a fabulous frontline workforce. We've got a lot of very well-qualified people who come to work for us because we pay well and because we've got good, secure jobs. Well, now we're turning those jobs into careers and helping people to develop their talent. So while we've been cutting back in many areas, we've been increasing our investment in training. And we're now starting to see the benefits of that with 225 people internally being promoted up into new roles, very often management roles, and 150 job moves as people move around from one part of the business to another to develop their talent. And that is our pipeline of future talent, sort of a rich source of diversity for the organisation. So I'm very excited by that. One thing I should thank you for is taking part in the Runway Marathon, the second time we've run that. And we decided to have an investor team taking part. And while you weren't the fastest, you were pretty fast. I think you came third. But you did raise the most money. So thank you for showing the best of banking by making such a good contribution to our charities. It's great to have the whole airport community coming together for that. We also were on television for the second time with Britain's busiest airport on ITV. We got 10 million people tuning in to watch over three episodes. And we actually beat Top Gear, which for those on this side of the pond is very exciting, although becoming easier by the episode. Things we have coming up, we're a lot more investment in training. We've got a new intake of graduates and apprenticeships coming through. And we're doing quite a lot of work with interns, and in particular making it easier for people from the local community who maybe don't have the opportunity to go and work with companies to come and get some work experience coming in with us. So a lot happening there. From a customer service point of view, I've touched on some of the highlights of what we have achieved and some of the things that you will have seen around the airport that have helped to get us there, things like investing in more automation around the border. That's one of the most important parts of passengers' journey when they're arriving. And we've been upgrading our e-gates in Terminal 3 and Terminal 4. And I apologise to anyone who's been caught up while we've been doing that work. You have to get worse for a while before you get better. But we have now expanded to Terminal 4. Terminal 3 is opening imminently with more e-gates. And we'll then add more to both Terminal 5. I think we have another 10 coming into Terminal 5 and another 5 coming into Terminal 2. So that'll be a continuing programme of improvement. Other things we've got coming up, we've been working on resilience, making it easier for passengers and aeroplanes to get around the airport. So we've nearly completed widening our taxiways to make it easier for A380s to get around to the north or the south. We've just started upgrading our baggage screening equipment. That'll make us even more secure, but also help to speed up bag processing, which is important. Probably the thing you're more interested in is the first-class cut-through in Terminal 5, which is something that people said we would never do, but we are doing. And either towards the end of this year or early next year, that will be opening up and to wild acclaim from a very small proportion of our passengers. And we've also been doing a lot of marketing. You probably watched Emmerdale last night, in which case you'd have seen us doing some consumer advertising for the first time. If you missed that, but you're in China, then we're doing a lot of work on social media in China as an example of how we're reaching out to our market. So we're working with both Weibo and WeChat to help to reach out to consumers, encourage them to come to the UK and to travel through Heathrow. In terms of Beat the Plan, we've made a lot of changes with our frontline people. We've been through another round of voluntary severance. It's not just about cost, it's also about things we're doing to build revenues. So we've seen some shift out of short-haul flights into long-haul flights, and probably the one that got the most attention is Oman Air's purchase of a slot pair from Air France for $75 million. That's an indication of the pent-up demand that is from airlines to come and fly out of Heathrow. I must emphasize, Air France got the benefit of that $75 million, not us. We're doing making some similar upgrades in Terminal 4 as we've made in Terminal 5. We've got the first airport cycle officer of any airport in the world. He's just started to encourage people to come to work by bike. And you'd be surprised how many people do and how many people want to. And we're just making it easier for them to do that. We've also been trialing something with Brompton Bikes, who are one of our local businesses, but also one of our big exporters. Most of the bikes that they send out to Korea and Japan, they're two of their main export markets, go by air from Heathrow. We've been working with them to make it easy for people to pick up a bike when they come through on their arrivals. And the kind of things we'll have going forward, we, like many businesses, are looking forward to what happens over the next 6-12 months in a post-EU world. And so we'll be continuing to look for efficiencies within our organisation. But also talking with the airlines about how we can help to take advantage of the exchange rates to bring more passengers through Heathrow. So we have to make an opportunity out of the situation that we're in. We're doing things like live monitoring of assets. That makes it easier for us to anticipate when problems occur and move in and address them quickly so that passengers can keep flowing through the airport without noticing any change. And we'll be introducing a personal shopper lounge into Terminal 5. This is something we trialled in Terminal 2, has been very successful, and we'll be introducing that to Terminal 5 to complement the fabulous range of shops we now have in there with Louis Vuitton and Chanel, which we opened about within the last 2 years, Hermes, and they've been going fabulously well. So strong underlying demand for the things we're doing. In terms of expansion, we've not been idle the last 6 months or so. We have been we've published our acceptance of the conditions set by the Airports Commission. We felt it was important that we cleared the decks and made it clear our commitment to doing the right thing so that the government could say yes to expansion. And in some cases, we went beyond the conditions set by the Airports Commission. We've also been looking at how do you have the skills that you need to build the airport and to operate it when you expand. And there's a huge opportunity and challenge to this, because an expanded airport is going to need 40,000 people with the right skills to be able to operate successfully, and somebody needs to plan how that's going to work. So we're setting up a skills task force, and David Blunkett, who's a former education secretary and home secretary in the Labour government, the previous Labour government, is going to chair that. So that's a great opportunity. And we've been getting a lot of support from politicians. 65% of MPs support Heathrow expansion. And that is what gives the government the mandate to be able to get on and make a decision. And I've been asked a lot today about, well, is Theresa May going to make a decision? Well, I don't think anyone can claim to know what is in the Prime Minister's mind. She is very good at playing her cards close to her chest. But I think she has shown that she is a woman of action. She's made some big decisions already just in the last week. And it's kind of hard to imagine already there being any other Prime Minister. She has made her mark so quickly that we all know who is in charge. So ultimately it will be her decision. But I think there's a very good likelihood that she will support the Airports Commission recommendation and get on and expand Heathrow. The Transport Secretary over the weekend was talking about making a rapid decision. That's encouraging. That suggests he wants to build on the work that has been done, all of which were supportive of Heathrow expansion. And we would just like to get on with it. I don't think we'll see anything before September, but I would guess sometime between when Parliament comes back in early September and the autumn statement in November. That's the sort of window I would expect the government to be making a decision on. And I'd be very disappointed if they didn't choose the option which has the policy backing, the political backing, the support from businesses and unions, and is ready to go. And I hope we'll have your backing as well, because we will need a lot of help from you to make sure that we can deliver this fantastic £16 billion privately funded infrastructure investment. And I think that's one of the reasons that the government will want to get on with it. They want to have a positive business plan for the UK, one that looks outward to the markets we get to, North and South America, Asia, Africa. That is what Heathrow can deliver. They'll want to bring the country together by having more regional connections. That is what we have a good track record of delivering. But they will also want a shot in the arm for the UK economy. And your funding of our infrastructure project will help that to happen and make sure that we are delivering jobs in the next 5 years, not just waiting for 10 years' time. And I think they'll also want to show a positive sign to the world that Britain is open for business and that we're getting on with these big projects. And what better time to do it than a time of global uncertainty, but where money is cheap, to get on and make these big infrastructure investments. So I think she will get on and make the right decision. And personally, I can't wait. So that's all I wanted to cover. I think we're very well placed. I want to thank you for your support. But I'd love to open up for questions. We have a microphone going around, and perhaps if you could just give your name and where you're from, then after we've taken any questions in the room, we'll open up to the phone line. So do we have a question? Here we go. One over here.
Thank you. Thank you. Miguel Medina from JB Capital. Three questions. The first one is on cost. The CFO mentioned that you're getting very close to the 600 million target. You have a bit more than 2 years left in the regulatory period. Any chance of that target being upgraded at 600 million? And the other bit also linked to cost. What percentage of the labor force is now under these new terms and conditions? And where do you see that percentage going to over time? The second question, it's a boring one on taxation. Can you update us on what the current status is of this limitation on the tax deductibility of financial expenses as a percentage of EBITDA? And the third one and final one, you stated that you see very little risk for your EBITDA target for 2016. There have been very significant downgrades to GDP estimates for 2017. Can you explain how you estimate passenger growth and whether there is a possibility of a decline in passengers in 2017 on the back of these forecasted very weak GDP numbers? Thank you.
Well, I would love to answer the taxation question, but I'll ask either Javi or Andrew to do it because they'll be even more articulate than I would be. I'll open on the cost opportunities, and then I don't know whether Andrew or Javier can answer on the where we are in terms of work terms and conditions. And I'll also touch on the last point, but other than that, I'll ask them to contribute. So in terms of cost savings, we have, when we talk about the 500 million, that is spread over the five-year period. And we can certainly deliver the 100 million that we still have to go. Equally, we've only got 2.5 years to deliver that in. So we're going to have to work hard. And, of course, we've done many of the easier things to do. So we're going to have to work hard to get to that £100 million level. And you'll also know that there are some costs which go against us. So business rates are growing well ahead of inflation, and there's very little we can do to control that. Do I think we can go further than that? Potentially, but I wouldn't want to bank it at this stage. All I can say is that, like many businesses, we will be turning over every stone we can to keep driving costs out of our business. If I just talk about the risk to passenger volumes, the way we look at passenger forecasting is sort of, we take a macroeconomic view of the world. We have quite a sophisticated model that takes into account oil prices and GDP around the world and a number of other factors. So we are also looking at the GDP forecasts that are being put out there for the moment. We also look at the capacity for airlines and what their future fleet plans are, so we get a better idea of the balance between supply and demand. And there is undoubtedly a lot of uncertainty at the moment about the global economy. Do I think it's likely we'll see some reduction in passenger volumes? I think it's perfectly possible we'll see some reduction in passenger volumes. But I don't think that'll have a material effect on our economics, partly because we are a little bit more robust than most other airports, partly also because we're such a large business that it would have to be quite a significant movement for it to be material in the scheme of things for us within 2016. I think it's too early to say about 2017. It's a little bit too far ahead. But I think we'll get a flavour for that over the next 3 or 4 months as to where the economy is going to go. And I suppose the risk to the economy is that all businesses do the same kind of things, that they are positive about the future prospects, but at the same time, we all pull back on spending, we all tighten our belts, and the cumulative effect of that is economic slowdown. I think there is a risk of that for the UK economy. I think we're somewhat insulated from that because we are a global airport. More than half of all of our passengers are going somewhere around the world. And so that gives us a little bit of protection from what might happen directly here in the UK. But we absolutely need to seize the opportunities that come with low exchange rates. And we're very well placed to do that. And that's why we're working with the airlines to build passenger volume. So I would look to be gaining share for transfer passengers and for passengers coming from places like North America into the UK over this period. And that's something we've done very successfully in the past, working with the airlines. Now, I hope I've talked long enough for Javier or Andrew to figure out the answer to the other good questions that you asked.
Thank you, Miguel. I'll pick the two questions. Regarding your first question in terms of changes in new terms and conditions for entry colleagues, we implemented this change in 2014, the first phase. Second phase, we introduced a further change in 2015. And what we are trying is also by implementing the voluntary severance program that we discussed, trying to accelerate as much as possible the attrition to new terms and conditions. So to give you some sense in terms of the volume of colleagues now joining the new terms and conditions, we expect that by 2018, circa 33% of security officers will be under new terms and conditions. And we should remember that in terms of colleagues working for Heathrow Airport Limited, we have a payroll of around 6,500 colleagues, of which security represents the majority of the population, around 3,600. So big proportion of that we expect to be helping our cost run rate from 18 onwards. In terms of the interesting question around taxation, which is a relatively complex area, we are talking about, of course, the impact of base erosion and profit shifting, BEPS Action 4, that was consultation started a couple of months ago. In very recently, Her Majesty Treasury has kicked off a new consultation process to clarify the definition of the two rules primarily impacting corporates. First of all, is potential interest deductibility to a cap of 30% of tax-based EBITDA plus the ability to apply the group ratio rule. And this is where the existence of this group ratio rule is intended to enable UK business, including Heathrow, to continue to obtain full deductibility for interest expense. So consultation has kicked off very recently. Consultation will finalize in August 2016. And we are, of course, we will be participating and providing input into that consultation.
That's just what I would have said. Thank you, Javier. Did we answer your excellent question? Thank you. So any other questions in the room?
Andrew from RBS. I just want to probe a little bit further on Miguel's question. Not on tax, I'm afraid. You talked about Brexit, John, 2017, 16-17 outlook. I mean, what about the sort of more medium-term implications potentially of trade areas, common aviation areas, and then there are other manner of areas. How are you starting now to frame that dialogue, your interaction with government, to really influence the decision making to come in the right place for you?
Well, it's a very important question, and I think government understands that enabling trade, which is what we do, is vital to the future success of the UK economy, particularly in the world outside the EU. And so we have been making our case to many government departments that this matters, but also to other significant players in this. So if you hear the CBI talking, they will be emphasising the importance of a single market in aviation. And it's something that as consumers we'll benefit from. It's a key enabler for trade, regardless of immigration policy. And I think government gets that. But we will be working with the DfT and other departments to make sure that is one of the essential elements of any new settlement. And the advantage we have with the DfT is that of all the sectors that the DfT cover, aviation is the one that's most affected by the decision to leave the EU. So we get a good share of voice within the DfT. The DfT is an important department within government, and we need to make sure that voice is heard, because aviation shouldn't in this context be seen as a sector in itself, but as an enabler for every other sector to do what it does so well, whether that's services sector like yourselves or our exporters. And given the importance of exporting by air and just trading by air these days, it's vital that we maintain that market access. So I think government's getting that, but we are working with airlines and other airports and other players to make sure that voice gets heard. Thank you. Any other questions in the room? Or should we just see if there's any questions on the line?
Just to remind telephone participants, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads. And our first question comes from the line of Alexei Yanis of PIMCO. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my question. What is the likely timing of your next bond issuance? I know you have a bond maturity coming up in October. Is it likely that we see an issuance before then?
I will ask Andrew to answer this one.
Thanks. I think, as you know, we really look at our debt financing on a sort of portfolio basis, and as Javier already explained in the presentation, we already have sufficient liquidity for us to carry on operating perfectly happy without any further fundraising until September 2018, including to meet the forthcoming debt maturity. So the chart on slide 13, Alexei, I would point you to that to sort of demonstrate that you know where we are in terms of overall liquidity. Of course, as we've also said, whilst our financing plans for 2016 are well advanced, we will continue to pursue other opportunities selectively. So, you know, it's certainly perfectly possible that you may see further issuance from us in the balance of this year, but it's not likely to be significant. It doesn't need to be anything in theory.
So, thank you, Andrea.
October issuance. Okay.
And one of the measures we've taken to anticipate and protect ourselves around the EU vote is to extend. This is more than 2 years position to be in. We do talk about with the board the possibility of raising more funding. The question obviously is about negative carry, and that all comes down to the kind of terms that we can get. So the better the terms you can offer, the more attractive it will be to take on negative carry. So help us to help you.
Okay. All right, so it'll be opportunistic. Thank you very much.
That's a good way of putting it. Thank you. Any other questions on the line?
No further questions on the telephone line at this time.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for your time, and sorry, there is another question in the room. Excuse me. Let's just get the microphone to you so that people on the line can hear.
Just wanted to know, how did the hedges that you have on your foreign currency bonds stand up to the fall in sterling?
Andrew, do you want to pick that up?
Sure. I think in terms of foreign currency hedging, we hedge all our non-sterling borrowings back into sterling. So we have currently between 4.5 and 5 billion of cross-currency swaps in place. Of course, there was a significant movement in the mark-to-market, 200 or 300 million, as a result of the events of late June. Obviously, that doesn't show through. I say obviously, it doesn't show through on the profit on the income statement because we achieve hedge accounting for most of those swaps. We have a broad range of swap counterparties with requirement to maintain minimum ratings for swap counterparties under our financing. So, I mean, we're perfectly comfortable with our overall hedging position, both on cross currencies and, if you like, more on the rate side.
Secondary question, do you expect the cost of hedging sterling to go up in the months to come?
Well, sadly, the cost of hedging has already gone up in the last 12 months. In terms of cross-currency swaps and indeed other swaps. So it remains to be seen what will happen in the coming months. We have been doing a little bit of work on the on our index-linked swap portfolio, and we don't see any signs of a meaningful change sort of pre the referendum and post the referendum.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for your questions, and thank you for coming along, and thank you also for all the support you've given us in the last 6 months, and I hope over the coming years. Thank you very much.